I'm just going with the flow. So
you're listening to Three Wise Truck Guys from Key Advisors.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It's Keith Ely with the Three Wise Truck Guys. Welcome to another session of some invigorating and stimulating discussion about all things trucks. As normal, we got John Whitnell with us and Mark Martinsic. John, good morning to you.
Top of the morning, Keith. Happy to be here.
Glad you are here. I'm glad you are here. And Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen. I hope you both are doing well, not getting in trouble.
Well, I'm not. Let's just, Keith, we got to keep this thing moving. Yeah. I'm not making any commitments there. I'm trying hard to not get in trouble, but it ain't. Yeah. Some days are better than others, is all I'm going to say on that.
I understand. If you are getting in trouble, at least have fun.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm well, but about the trouble part, I don't know that that's so true. But
doing well.
Hey, we've got a special guest with us today. We'll introduce him here in a few minutes. John, any update on the used truck market after our January discussion? By the way, at ATD, there was a lot of conversation because we dropped the podcast on day one of ATD, and a lot of people came up saying, hey, I just saw your new podcast drop and looking forward to listening to it. So any update, John?
So just by way of summary for our listeners, that was kind of a sobering forecast, right? We're not highly optimistic about 2024, and high supply is what's really keeping us awake at night. January Class 8 retail sales supported the sobering forecast we put together. So there's, this is a great, your used truck strategy needs to be manage your assets, try and keep your inventory levels under control. We're just finishing up February right now, so we'll tumble our February numbers here pretty quick. Can't be too specific with our audience today, but the best coaching that we gave in our last podcast is still consistent here. Be cautious, be careful in the used truck business. Keep your inventory down, manage your assets, stay on top of your sales force. Just continue to execute the basics in the used truck business, and you can make some money in 2024, but it's going to be hard to do.
Appreciate that, John. And if, again, to any of the listeners that would like that forecast that John's referring to, that he and then Whitnell and Analytics puts together, just visit the KEA Advisors website, and you can find that forecast there. So, as usual, Mark, what's happening out there? What's good? What's bad that you've observed since the last time we were together?
Guys, okay. As long as I've been around, which we've established many times in a long time, okay, the number one customer concern, okay, has always been about communications, price and communications. I want to talk about the communication side of it. Recently, I was in a dealership that is still communicating to the customer many times after the repairs are made and then trying to sell the job to them. But when more important, the communications about status are all reactive. And with all the technology we have today, all the programs, Decisive, Uptime Pro, I360, and so forth, okay, it's just, it's crazy, okay? Customers want to know status. They care about price, but they want to know status. And too often, we're unable to give them status. When a customer calls at this dealership, I watched several times customer calls for status, and unless they had just picked up the repair order, now they've got to find a repair order to get status. And once they find it, we all know how many different places it can be in. Once they find it, now I got to talk to the foreman, or I got to talk to the parts department, or I got to talk to the technician himself to find out the status. And the customer feels like we lost their damn truck. Okay. Many, many dealers, though, the good news is many dealers who have adapted this technology and the discipline are able to be proactive with their communications, not just give the customer the estimate and price, but talk about the benefits of doing it. Why is it $10,000 when it's just a sensor? Or why, whatever the case may be, some explanation showing some value for that. And I just think it's more important than ever, okay, no matter how many of these trade publications you read, almost every one comes up with fleets and truck owners complaining about the lack of communication, lack of status. Okay. And there's been some small erosion, not a lot, of a lot of those customers finding aftermarket sources. Luckily, we're not in the car business where there's a lot of competition, but there's more and more every day because of that, particularly for the lower skilled jobs. So if you want your customers to keep coming back to you, remember we're a service.
Very good. John, turn it to you.
You know, I'm going to take my used truck hat off and I'm going to put my leader / manager hat on. And on the positive side of the ledger, Keith, been having some conversations with a handful. This is still not a trend, okay, but I've been having some conversations with some people that I think have done a pretty admirable job of establishing annual sales goals for their sales force. Unit volumes, gross margin expectations, expense, etc. So I as dealers get bigger, we're starting to see some more sophistication and some dealers getting better at that. It's still in many, many instances, just an exercise that people go through so that they can check the box and move on. But I've actually had some conversations with some people this year that have done that pretty effectively and actually got their first quarter performance reviews already set up. So I kudos to those that are embracing, setting sales goals. When you talk about Salesforce Management 101, I mean, that's job one right there. If you're going to manage expectations and hold them accountable for performance, they better know what the target looks like. Okay, so I think that's pretty good. And then the not so good is here we are in February. We're wrapping up February, the second month of the year. We're in the first quarter for most dealerships, and the engagement of most department heads and the establishment and development of business plan, they don't even know that the plan exists. I mean, they know there's one out there, but what their expectations are. So I still think this is an area where we've got miles and miles to go before we're current. And I have had some current, some examples of that this week as well with people that, they're going to get they got a January report card and they had no idea what the book looked like. And now you're trying to hold them accountable for their performance. It's a head scratcher. So same issue, a little bit different level in terms of Salesforce versus department heads, but still need to get a lot better at gauging and bringing the whole organization into the business economic planning process.
Yep. I'm going to just tangent off of your comment, John, just a little bit. So mine's leadership.
That, by the way, I've been noticing that. Kind of wait for you. You always make me go first and then you kind of come along behind me. And
It's different, but it's off of your topic, right? So leadership. And so I'm going to just talk about some engagements I'm not doing, but that we're doing. And I found them to be pretty fascinating, and it's on continuous improvement. And, I always think that we need to always continually improve, but I've never really been through the process, I would say, of the formal process and putting together continuous improvement, doing it continually. How about that? So, one of the things that I've observed in several projects right now, and Mark and I had a chance to visit with one of our customers that wants to try and bring this into a peer group that they're doing, bring that formality into it, but is just the engagement that, number one, John, your point about, setting the understanding and the targets, if you will. Just first of all, the lack of understanding of many people of what that entails. Certainly they may know a number, but what are all the levers that it takes to reach that number or reach that piece or whatever it is. But once people are starting to understand what levers to pull to get to that end goal, and then really to start to understand the idea of root cause and defining what those root causes are, and then ordering them in order of value to correcting whatever it is that they're trying to correct or improve, and understanding that this is a continuous loop, right? It's not, you don't end when you get to the last box on the document, that you come back to the same issue. And now you address root cause number two, and then you address root cause number three. And sometimes your correction will fix a couple of root causes, But this idea of engaging in a continuous loop of addressing solutions, and that it's not a, it, there's no end, but it's a culture of continually identifying, correcting, moving backwards to the box again and working your way through the cycle. And to me, that's been, I've always known that intuitively, but I've never really been through the formal process. And as some of our team has taken our customers through that process to see their eyes become very wide open, and frankly, mine do too, because I start thinking about things inside of our company that we need to look at in terms of continual improvement. And I just find it, again, back, John, you know, as a tangent to what you're talking about, it's not just an end of the year thing, but it's a first quarter thing, a second quarter thing, even down to the level of daily pieces of this to continually improve it. And I think those that start to understand the value of continuous improvement and the impact it can have on their business is huge.
I think there's really two parts to that, right? There's the continuing improvement process that we take them through, but you've got to develop that culture within your organization of everyone's involvement to really make that change or that improvement exponential, right? Okay. And that's what we strive for, and what most organizations that are good at it strive for. It's a culture of continuous improvement. Then the process matters even more when you get there, the fact that it's a cycle.
And I think that culture is pretty important. Like, you can't be without it. So
Right.
You know, the dealer principal's role in that is really vital, right? There's all the investment in establishing that culture on the front end. But, you know, when the dealer principal winks or wavers for 1 second on this, all this hard work can really go down the tube. So, you know, this is an unwavering, rock-solid, ironclad commitment from the dealer principal or the president, you know, whatever title they use for the guy that owns the business or gal that owns the business. That's the hardest part of continuous improvement, is getting the person in the corner office to never blink.
It can be a pretty sobering process too, can't it? I mean,
right.
For that person.
Well, there's a lot of leaps of faith in here, right? There are days, there are months when you don't think this is paying off. And that's when you blink.
Yep.
Don't blink.
Yeah, possibly we can do another podcast on that process, okay, and some of the elements in it in the future. But you know, plan, use data to help you make your plan. And once you've got a plan that you agree on, then it becomes an edict, right? And now you start using that one step at a time continuous improvement process.
Well, along those lines, we've got a special guest this month. Our topic is service workflow and performance improvement. We're going to focus on how decisive utilization, the decisive platform and utilizing, and how it supports that workflow and performance improvement. Gil Klinger of KEA Advisors is with us. Mark, you want to tell us a little bit about the importance of workflow and how that affects service department performance? And then, if you don't mind, bring Gil onto the stage.
Well, obviously, workflow, throughput, okay, having a service department that has some flow to the jobs, everything the original equipment manufacturers are pushing right now, measuring dwell time and throughput, customer communications that I spoke about earlier, and so forth, are all really best practices for any service department. Quite frankly, auto or truck, but especially commercial truck, because these people are trying to make money with that equipment. And so it's not just important to have status, it's important to process the job as quick as you can and maintain quality, of course, okay? And there's a lot of pieces to that process, and there's a lot of technology that can help you with that process. And certainly when we work with them, we work with whatever technology they have. But Gil has really embraced this part of his job. Gil Klinger is a professional advisor with us. His subject matter expertise includes service operations, some of those technology pieces such as Decisive and standard operating process development and implementation. Not only does he have 30 years experience in the transportation industry, but he's a former owner of a transportation company before that. So he's not a young man, but he's not as old as me. Okay, but I'd like to bring into the room, Gil, if you can turn on your microphone. Welcome to the Three Wise Guys, Wise Truck Guys.
Thanks, everybody, for inviting me over. My name is Gil Klinger, and I really appreciate the chance to be here today. These podcasts are very important, and they share a lot of great information, so hopefully I can live up to their expectations today. So I'm going to thank you, Mark. Thank you for the introduction. Service workflow and performance improvement is very near and dear to my heart, as you all know. Coming up on 4 years of Key Advisors, but over 30 years in the industry itself. That being said, the continuous improvement part of this is very important as we focus in going forward, and how do we make things better? I wake up every morning asking my same question to myself, is there a better way? And through that continuous improvement and creating what I call a CMT team, and that's not country music television, that is a change management team, is very important to the continuous improvement roles, especially when we talk about implementing a new SOP or standard operating process, and Decisive to be able to support that for better customer experiences, better internal and external communications and the like. So one of the involvements when I roll up into a dealership and we've been assigned to answer the question, how can we do better? How can we improve and help standardize the process so it's the same at all of our dealer locations? We would like the customer experience to be the same no matter what one of the stores that you visit. And having a standard SOP, again, is the key to all of this. And creating one is important to hold our employees accountable at the same time being able to provide the best service that we can offer. So that being said, one of the key ingredients to making this successful to any of our engagements has been, how do you get everybody on the same page? And John kind of hinted to that a little bit earlier in this podcast by saying it has to start at the top down. They have to be engaged. They have to be able to support this. And the message needs to be consistent all the way across the board. That being said, once you choose that team or that change management team, they're here to support everything the same as we go to all of the dealer visits at the different locations to help bring the same message across the board. And not only that, but to help support the changes that are going to take place. They say, and I don't know who they are, but they say you need to hear something 7 times to be able to recall it, 21 days to make it become a habit, but 66 days to make that habit to where it's not even a second thought. It's just a continuous improvement to where we started to help roll that out, help support.
Hey, Gil, to breathe some life into this, why don't you, you've got a couple of projects you've been working on here recently. Why don't you talk about specifically one of these projects that you've been working on?
Sure. I would be more than happy to. Thank you for that, John. We were engaged with a dealer group. And my very first day is we're bringing everybody up and introducing the reasons why we were here, why Key Advisors was invited to start this engagement. One of the great questions was, what are you going to do differently that we haven't already tried 3 times previous to your visit?
Good question.
And my answer was, I'm here to help you succeed, but it's not about me. It's about your team and how we can arrive at that ability to have all of your team.
So, Gil, once you got past that part, what did you find as opportunities and how did you prioritize those and go forward?
Well, I brought everybody into a conference room and we talked for 3 days about what their current processes are, where their goals want to be, what's their direction, what's their vision that they're looking for. At that time, we prioritized what was important, what was not, what was a short-term goal, and what was a long-term goal. But how can we bring everybody onto the same page? So during our discovery process, we went around the room and we said, these are the steps that we do now And then we talked about what steps are missing. And then when we realized that this was more of a parts versus service experience at this dealer group, we had to decide how could we make it become one team, one dream? How do we make it a fixed operations goal instead of individual departments, and how their improvements to each other to support each other for success actually became
so what Gil, reality. When you guys were together, what were you looking at that were some key things that you started measuring in that discovery process?
That's a great question. Well, we reviewed the data for the previous 12 months before our engagement, prior to our engagement. We found out that the average throughput time for a four-hour repair at this dealer group was 4.8 days, not hours, days.
And what do you mean by throughput, by the way?
Throughput would be the time of the RO creation to the time of last punch when they invoice the RO at the time of invoice. So if we took a four-hour repair, we got the RO written up, created. We went through a triage process, determined root cause, got the authorization from the customer to do the repair, actually performed the repair, finished up. We did a quality control check and then invoiced the customer. That average cycle time was
for 4 hour days.
So what were the elements there that you had to correct, Gil? If you had to name the top three things you had to correct to reduce that time, to increase that throughput, to reduce dwell time and so forth, the top three elements you had to work on, okay?
The very first thing I would say was internal communication. How do we keep the techs in their bays working on vehicles? How do we get the parts staged prior to the actual repair? And how do we obtain authorization from the customer in a timely manner? I think those three things would be the key to being successful.
For that project?
For that particular project.
And what kind of improvements did you see once you had time to build that structure and implement that and get everybody on board?
After we did all the internal training and explained the benefits to both departments and how they could both set each other up for success, including the technicians as a third element, working together, we were able to reduce that throughput time down to less than 48 hours. The parts department focused on exactly which parts we needed for the fast-moving parts for those four-hour repairs. And with a first-time fill rate of a back counter only of more than 92%, working together with the parts manager and the service manager, the shop foreman all coming together saying, this is how we need to do it. We established a staging area, and we established a workflow through Decisive to be able to communicate that by keeping every employee in their work area or their workstation being able to communicate back and forth non-verbally and setting everybody else for success.
So the workflow became electronic, basically using the technology that they had. Is that correct?
That's correct. So after the SOP was developed by both the parts and service departments as a team effort, then they engaged on how do we remove waste in their particular processes on an
So, Gil, I know a number of times you've helped the dealer, once they have those basics in place and so forth, go paperless. Was this one of the dealers that were able to go paperless 100% of the time or part of the time?
Yes, sir. In less than a year after the start of our engagement, after we trained all of their locations, followed through weekly to make sure that we addressed any concerns or any hiccups in the overall process, the technicians were the first to raise their hand and say, why do we still carry a paper RO around? This is very time-consuming and a big waste of our time. Can we please go paperless? It wasn't the management that made that decision. It was the technicians as a whole. Once they went paperless, they have been paperless now for over a year and a half, very successfully, and they haven't even taken a
show. John, you got a question?
Yeah, if we could. So we've been talking a little bit about process management and kind of trying to just see through. But was this particular client, were they a Decisive dealer already? And perhaps if they were, can you tell me, did we Were we using the tool effectively? Can you help me understand how the changes we made relative to decisive factored into the process improvements as well?
That's a great question, John. Yes, this particular dealer group did have decisive. They were using it maybe 25% of its full capabilities. Once we were able to establish the importance of it, once we were able to establish an SOP or standard operating process so that everybody could be held accountable and understand what the next steps were in the overall process, things started to fall in place and it became much more efficient, much more effective, all at the same time while increasing their internal communication. Everybody knew what page was next in the book and how the story was going to end at the end of the repair itself while updating the customers along the way. Being able to prioritize what's important, having it staged, looking at the shop layout, grouping the technicians into categorizations of triage and quick repair for 4 hours or less, a main shop repairs and advanced diagnosis. We were able to put teams together to reduce the customer's throughput times. And at the same time, we found out we could do more with less and actually increase the overall shop capacity while increasing the customer experience all at the same time, becoming more profitable throughout the whole process.
If you look at decisive, what were the things that you trained to, or what were the things that you took? A couple questions. What you trained to, and by the time you got done with building the SOP, building support and decisive training on for decisive, what was the decisive utilization after the fact?
The first couple of steps were the most important in laying the foundation so we could build the process so it was successful. The focus on notes and workflows and having everything documented, we could follow the steps of the overall process. If something fell off the rails, we could go back in minutes and figure out where the process failed or when the process was not followed. And the importance that we've realized by doing this assignment was it's so important to have the RO, what we call, we keep the RO live. We update the customer throughout the whole process. If there's a change, we stop, we update the estimate, excuse me, so that the estimate should match the RO at the end of the repair process within just a few dollars of each other, updating the stories, and we can have our paperwork closed within hours instead of days, or the lag time from the last punch to the invoice was dramatically reduced. When we started the project, it was around 17 to 20 days to get an RO closed on an average, and that includes both customer pay and warranty, down to less than 48 hours. We started figuring out in the overall process is where we could remove some of the waste again by staging the parts, having certain technicians follow through. This dealership, after they became paperless, found a reason to have their technicians become self-dispatching, where we would group these repairs and the next technician that came up for a job just looked up at the vision board in Decisive and said, okay, that's my next job, knew where the parts were staged. In the notes, they knew where the truck was staged outside and where the keys were placed without having to ask a single soul what they were supposed to do. Clear, nonverbal instructions with clear expectations.
What Decisive percentage utilized now, Gil?
They average 94 to 96% of all open cases. This particular dealer group was actually able to improve over $2.9 million in both parts and labor sales in the first year alone by utilizing Decisive.
You mean they sold that much more?
Yes, sir. They increased their overall sales that much more and also losing seven technicians throughout the whole process in that 12-month time. They were actually able to accomplish more with less.
Gildo, look, those are pretty impressive. It's kind of hard to argue with that, but help us understand some of maybe the metrics speak for themselves, okay? But maybe the esprit de corps, help us understand perhaps some of the other benefits that might have accrued to the organization by having a more disciplined process managed approach and leveraging Decisive more effectively. You know, was there better communication? Was there better customer satisfaction? Those are a little tougher to measure than some of the standard metrics we got, but just help me understand the operating environment back on the parts desk and the service where these guys interface.
That's a great point, John. And some of the measurements that we used, we noticed in the first 90 days of the first engagement here that the gross profit and labor sales increased over 3%. Their parts sales across the back counter increased at 4.5% because we became more organized. We did not add extra parts to a job without notifying the customer. I can't tell you how many times when we first started this, the original estimate was $4,000, and at the end it was $6,000. And we went back and we analyzed, as we do the review analysis of an RO, when did that change, or what part was added, and what process broke down or was not followed. As we audited these cases together with the service management team, and they were able to identify some root causes and redirect some workflows. In this particular case, any additional things that needed to be updated after the original estimate was workflowed back to the service advisor to add to the estimate and then update the customer accordingly. And that's keeping the RO live throughout the whole process. By doing this, we were able to also increase our gross profit in both labor and parts sales.
Hey, Gil, I want to interrupt you for a second. I want to tie on to John's question, because apparently I do that quite a bit. So what I was wondering, because John brought up a question that I was wondering about, and he used the term esprit de corps. Yes, what did it do for the morale of the techs and the advisors as you started to put this into place? What did it do for the morale of that group of people, and even maybe the customers, but certainly the techs, the advisors, the foreman, and so forth.
And that's a great question, Keith. The culture really made a huge shift after the initial, hey, this will never work, you have to prove it to us. After the first 90 days into the first 6 months, they started to recognize that their jobs became less stressful. Their communication increased both externally and internally. At one point, the service director walked into the write-up area and he was worried that he was losing customers because the phones weren't ringing anymore. We all grew up in that industry. You got three rings to answer the phone. And when the phone stopped ringing, that means your customer stopped coming in. They were able to identify that they had actually increased 11% with less than 3 or 4 phone calls per hour versus 30 to 40 phone calls as they kept track of their phone call logs.
What increased, Gil? What increased the percent?
The percentage of increasing the labor and part sales of 11% by reducing actual overall phone calls because they did everything through Decisive. They were able to keep up with their fleet portals. All the major fleets have Decisive portals where they can communicate non-verbally and have instant instant notification when there's a change in the status. So they can figure out how the overall repair process was. The customers loved the communication aspect, always been able to follow through on how the overall process is. And they were more proactively reaching out to the customers instead of reactively when the customers called in. So that whole culture shift was a big paradigm in handling the customer experience and actually being able to have more throughput through the shop at the same time.
Gil, that's pretty fantastic results, okay? Obviously, there's other technologies that can help dealers as well if they don't have Decisive, but Decisive is probably the biggest known out there right now, okay, and certainly does a lot of things. In a previous podcast, Keith and John and I talked about the rule of twos, and for our listeners, refresh here, rule of twos is from open to first punch, 2 hours in a service department, first punch to last punch, 2 times the sold hours, and from last punch to invoice, 2 days or less, okay? So this whole process that you put in there, we put a lot of emphasis on that in a previous podcast. This whole process that you put in, how did it affect that rule of twos? Or did it?
That's great. It sure has, Mark. And it's really affected their ability when we do the rule of twos RO analysis. That's a snapshot in their overall process. Are we winning? Are we losing? Are we hitting the 2 hours or less mark on the first time from RO creation to first punch? They can measure how effectively they're actually doing and their processes were way over 80%. Even though they're not open 24/7, they were still able to hit that number. It can't be a perfect 100%, but they strive for an 80% goal, and they maintain that goal month after month. Having a dedicated team to doing quick repairs at 4 hours or less has really reduced their overall throughput times. So the rule of two, when we talk about sold hours times two, if it's a 4 hour repair, are we able to do that job in 8 hours or less? They averaged over 65% for the last 6 months, which has been fantastic. Again, the profitability is up and the customer experience is going through the roof. They're telling two friends and they're telling two friends, if you want to get your truck done, bring it over to this dealer and he will take care of it for you. I think the biggest change for this dealer group was the ability to think outside the box. They've even treated customer pay and warranty the same. They create an estimate for the customer, and the customer being in this case, the warranty department. They get pre-approvals. They get the customer, hey, this repair is covered. This is what we'd like to do. We get your authorization because it's still a warranty repair and you still need to approve it. And they work that into the process. Because they're keeping the RO live and they're updating the warranty department, they're able to close the RO within hours, not days after last punch. So their receivables in their warranty department have decreased by over 400% in a timely being paid in 30 days or less, and not having the warranty schedule carry over in a 30, 60, 90 day marks because they had to go back and forth. Hey, you forgot the pictures, or you forgot to fill out this form, or I needed that old serial number. They communicate this stuff up front non-verbally through the workflows and Decisive, and that's helped reduce a lot of their lag time overall. It's just been a fantastic experience. The warranty department really appreciated the fact that they had a chance to be able to talk about it. We say slow down to speed up for that reason. We've put the warranty process in front now instead of back. After the repairs are done, okay, what did you do and how do we collect the time? And, oh, you forgot this. And it bounces back and forth between the warranty department, the service managers, and the technicians. That communication has now been pushed up front to be able to establish what they need, how they need it, and the warranty can be filed promptly as soon as the RO is invoiced now.
Gil, I got a question for you, then I'm going to turn it to John and Mark, see what else they have. So,
yes, sir.
Mark said there's a lot of other tools that are out there, and I agree with that. There's Uptime Pro and i360 and repair management and so forth. And so I'm going to lump all those together into my question. Could what to the results that you've, and I know this is more than one dealer, but the results of faster closing times, more profitability, increasing labor sales, all the things you talked about in terms of the performance of the repair work itself and the techs. Could you do that without any of those tools, Decisive, Uptime, Pro, repair management, or those types of things? Could you do that without those?
Okay. Yes, we can. And that all starts with the foundation of having the correct SOP, standard operating process. And remember, when we build or we create an SOP together, that's a living document. That's not a one and done.
What's the value of having a Decisive, repair management, Uptime Pro in this system? Then, if you can do it,
communication, both internally and externally, they all have the ability to be able to communicate with the customers, provide the estimates, update them, and keep them live throughout the whole process. But you have to have the consistency to be able to do it over and over again by having that SOP support whatever technology that we're using, whether that be i360, repair management, Decisive, or Uptime Pro. It doesn't matter. It's the foundational that you need to build so that you can build that overall process and reduce the wastes and increase the customer experience throughout the whole
process. Mark, you got anything you want to add to that?
No, I think, Gil, I believe, I'd like your opinion on it, the fact that some of that technology, including Decisive, has a, for lack of a better term, a paper trail, albeit electronic, it helps with the disciplines. and taking away the he said, she said's in the internal communication, because everything is documented, including internal communications, not just external communications. Would you agree with that?
100%. That is correct. And that's a great way to be able to coach, re-coach, and retrain your team as necessary to hold them accountable so we can get to that consistency factor every day, no matter what, without looking at it twice. This has just become natural habit for us to be able to follow these along and have the better overall culture. It reduces our stress and it improves our morale. And when we're happy, our customers are even happier. Everybody dread coming to work, because now their job is actually easier.
Hey, Gil, Keith Ely again. And sorry about that. We had a technical difficulty, and I know John got blown out of the podcast recording, and I did too, and left you and Mark. And Mark had to step out, and John did too. So you and I are just going to wrap this up. I think the last question that we were starting to get to was, you know, about the certainly we can do, according to your thoughts, that the SOP can be installed and performed without a Decisive or Uptime Pro or Repair Management i360. But, you know, your engagements that you do, and you've talked about the improvement in utilization of Decisive, in this case, of improving the utilization of how they're using it before and then after going through the engagement with you. And certainly you've talked about the value and increased sales and increased gross. And we haven't talked any about really tech efficiency other than the rule of twos, but I know there's a lot of improvement in proficiency and those types of things. But I guess my question for you is, if that can be done, if the SOP can be installed and operated without a Decisive, without a i360 Repair Management, without an Uptime Pro, why do you get so passionate about including, in this case, for these two dealers we're talking about, in fact, for most of your engagements? I know you have some with Uptime and with i360 Repair Management, but most of them being Decisive. Why do you get so passionate about the support of that technology? Why is that so crucial to you?
I can see what a difference it makes. Okay. I can see where we start and where we ended. The consistency factor, the proficiency factor for the technicians that you mentioned, but the overall processes and the way that they eliminate waste throughout the whole start to finish of a repair order has been an amazing transformation. I think the key is having a documented process and the foundation where to build on. It is key to all this, again, no matter what technology we use. But yes, it's more prevalent in Decisive, but their overall effect, everybody's working together as a team, and everybody's common goal is how do we take care of the customer's expectations to manage those at the same time doing more with less. And I think it really starts to shine that way.
So does that technology allow you then to essentially do more with less? I mean, it supports the SOP, but does it enhance your productivity, I guess? Not of just the tech, but of everybody involved?
It does. It does. Again, internal communication's up, external communication is up. Our estimates are more precise. We're doing things right the first time. We stress over and over, slow down to speed up. Take the time, build it right, and it will come. And then the customers really appreciate it because the return on the customer base has really increased at both of the last engagements that I have. Their customers have now said, this is fantastic. I wish we would have had this all along. And Decisive just this month has rolled out two-way communication now, so we can text. Again, most of our customers like the texting aspect of this. So just one more added feature to today's technology to keep up that communication factor back and forth. It's a great thing.
What's that?
It's a great thing to have.
Okay. Just a couple more questions. And I, you know, when we think about these technology items, they're not free to the dealer. There's a investment they have to make. And certainly there's an investment that they make when they engage us to build the SOP, to train to the SOP, to understand how to dissect the SOP, the exceptions, if you will. You talked about that, right? What happened on this RO, the RO review? There's a lot of time and learning and a cost to the dealer to invest in us, and then certainly a secondary one, or maybe not secondary, another one for the technology. My first question is about the technology, just that piece. Is it worth the investment in the technology to support that SOP? Will I get a return on investment?
Oh, my goodness, yes. And I would say that the cost per month that's associated, in this case, Decisive, they pay for that in minutes, in the first couple of minutes of the month, just by having that technology accessible and the add-ons that they can add to it. Like the latest one in last year has been Cummins Guidance. Again, for warranty purposes and everything else, they have the connector. It saves on admin time. It saves on technician time. When we talk about the six-minute rule, that's huge. I mean, for every 6 minutes a tech's not working on a truck in a bay costs the average dealership just under $40 every 6 minutes. This helps eliminate some of the waste and duplicacies that are very common these days and helps drive right to the bottom line. So yes, the technology is a key part of this and can easily be recouped very quickly.
Interesting. I hadn't thought of that. You said $40 every 6 minutes, but I guess that's true when you think about the average door rate being about $200 an hour, and you have about that much in parts for every hour you sell. So,
yes, sir.
You know, that's just about $40 a minute. Interesting. Last question then, or maybe the question to go along with that is, you know, we talked about the technology and the return on investment. What about the return on investment for building the SOP? Worth the time and effort?
Yes, sir. In the two engagements that we were just recently talking about, both of the dealer groups paid for their investment or their ROI within 6 months of the start of the engagement. And the rest of all that has been straight profit right to the bottom line since that time, and continues to grow. Okay. Because once this is installed, it's just exponentially keeps expanding. Again, doing more with less throughout the whole process. So it's a huge factor. And then both of the companies came back and said they couldn't have done it on their own. So we played a key role in this to help them help themselves to be even more successful than when they started.
Hey, Gil, in the second part of that question, I wanted to ask you about then was, you know, we pretty well said that we can do the SOP by itself, and that the SOP combined with the technology just that supports that SOP just makes the SOP more effective, more efficient. What Mark said earlier about we have audit trails, we can measure that SOP much easier, identify the exceptions when it goes out of bounds. Last question I would have for you, you know, is can you just take the technology application and do it without an SOP?
Technically, you can. A lot of the OEMs have rolled out Decisive or some version of Decisive, their own platform that they choose to use. But we found that most of the dealer groups struggle in how to integrate that into their daily processes, into their daily routines, to make it become successful going forward. Anything's possible, but you have to have the right team, the right change management team, put in place the right structure, the right foundation for that to be successful. And that's where we come in as Key Advisors to help them take it to the next level to become successful.
I know you made a comment earlier today when we were visiting about some stuff that you were at. You were helping out on a project yesterday and something to the effect that you were doing some service advisor training, I think, and that half the class they had a technology tool and they weren't using it because they didn't really know how to use it based on the OE's training and implementation, and so it wasn't effective. You can probably say that a little better than I did.
Yeah, one of the takeaways, one of the aha moments for me yesterday, to your point, when we did this class, is that they had asked the class, where do you spend most of your time? And the answer was face-to-face to get answers, because it wasn't in that technology's platform. It wasn't there, so they had to stop what they were doing, walk to the other department or to the other group and ask the questions, because they didn't follow the process, they didn't know the process, they just weren't all on the same page. So we discussed how much admin time was actually spent doing that, where it could be better served with others, updating your customers or keeping your ROs live, closing ROs in a timely fashion. All that has attribution to how much time is actually, in this case, wasted by going face-to-face instead of having everybody on the same page.
So that payback right there again, that's the payback we're talking about. So, Gil, thanks. Yes, thanks for taking time out of your day to visit with John and Mark and myself. I appreciate it very much. I know that they do too. Anything you want to close with before we sign off?
No, it's been a pleasure. I actually enjoyed this. Thank you for the invitation. And hopefully someday I can do it again.
I look forward to it as well. Well, Gil Klinger's left the building now, and we appreciate Gil spending time with us. If you'd like to learn more about some of the things that Gil has done, some of his projects, you can go to keyadvisors.com. You can look at some of the discussions that are on there, some of the case studies. I think there's two highlight Gil. If you'd like to learn more about just in general how we can help your service department with building and installing an SOP to help your service throughput, service profitability, integration of Decisive, integration of Uptime Pro, integration of I360 repair management, give us a call. Let us know. You can email us at info@keyadvisors.com. Go to keyadvisors.com to our website. We'd love to talk to you. And with that said, again, my two compadres have left because of technical issues, but I appreciate Mark Martinsic being with us. And just a word, Mark has had a tough week. He's lost a brother and a brother-in-law and now an aunt in about a week and a half period of time. So our thoughts and prayers go out to Mark and his family. And we appreciate John Whitnell sitting in with us as well. He brings a lot of insight and knowledge to us. So until next time, this is Keith Ely for the Three Wise Truck Guys, and we're out of here.
Thanks for listening to Three Wise Truck Guys, the podcast from Key Advisors. We'd love to hear from you. Send us feedback, comments, and questions to info@keyadvisors.com.